Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. Coming up this hour.
U.S. futures climb as China takes steps to contain the spread of a deadly virus.
Shares of Netflix gain as international growth offsets a slowdown in the U.S.
And the Saudi crown prince is said to be linked to the hacking of a phone owned by Jeff Bezos.
Along party lines, the Senate set the impeachment trial rules in a marathon first day. Plus, opening statements begin in the trial of disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Derek Jeter sails into the Hall of Fame. He got all but one vote. Larry Walker going in two. Islanders beat the Rangers. A loss for St. John's.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by SEI. With a 50-year history of innovation, SEI's outsourced solutions have helped to achieve lasting success for investment managers, asset owners, private banks, and independent advisors. Learn more at SEIC.com.
U.S. futures rebounding from yesterday's losses. 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 13 points this morning. Dow futures up 84. NASDAQ futures up 58. The DAX in Germany, little change. So is the CAC in Paris. FTSE 100 up about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.76%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.52%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.6% or 36 cents at $58.02 a barrel. And COMEX gold, little change. Changed at $15.58.40 an ounce. Nathan.
And Karen, we begin with the latest on the coronavirus outbreak in China. Now there are confirmed cases in six locations outside China, including one in the United States. Here with the latest is Bloomberg's Bob Moon.
A man in his 30s who had traveled to China has been hospitalized near Seattle out of an abundance of caution, while U.S. experts stress the risk to Americans remains low. Still, Nancy Messonnier of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says some may be more vulnerable than others.
Older adults with underlying health conditions may be at increased risk for severe disease.
Coronaviruses cause sicknesses ranging from the common cold to some more severe. Screenings of flights arriving in the U.S. from China have been expanded from New York and California to airports in Atlanta and Chicago. Bob Moon, Bloomberg. Daybreak.
All right, Bob, thank you. China is taking steps to contain the new respiratory virus, starting nationwide screenings and ordering a shutdown of the city where the virus originated. We get more from Bloomberg's Selena Wang in Beijing.
They're going to be in regular contact with the international community about how it's developing, as well as with the World Health Organization that will be coming on site for screenings and tests. China is saying that they are cracking down on the wild animal commerce. The disease is thought to have originated from a market in Wuhan where there was interaction between humans and wild animals. Public gatherings are also being kept to a minimum. You also have Premier Li Keqiang saying that there needs to be regular and constant and transparent communication with the public.
There have been at least 440 confirmed cases of the coronavirus in China, resulting in at least 9 deaths.
Beijing's move to start nationwide screenings helped lift market sentiment as stocks in Asia reversed a sell-off to finish in the green. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. An index of Macau casino stocks still came under some selling pressure as the gambling hub confirmed its first case of the virus. But Hong Kong's Hang Seng index staged a comeback after Tuesday's 2.8% drop. In mainland China, the CSI 300 paired earlier losses to finish at 0.4%. Japan's Nikkei 225 climbed 0.7%, while in Australia and New Zealand, equity markets closed at record highs. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Back here in the U.S., shares of Netflix up 1.2% after a relatively upbeat earnings report. International subscriber growth helped offset a slowdown in the U.S., though projections for user growth came in short of estimates. Dan Morgan is senior portfolio manager at Synovus Trust.
On this fourth quarter, they only did a little over 400,000 in domestic subscribers, which was a 72% drop. And yet they were still able to eke out some growth in terms of revenues. It really looks to me like they're countering the drop-off in domestic subscribers with these price increases.
Dan Morgan says some of that subscriber slowdown can be attributed to increased competition with the launch of Apple TV and Disney Plus.
Well, the world's richest man is in the news. Sources tell us Jeff Bezos' cell phone was hacked after a message exchange between him and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. Joining us now with details is Bloomberg's Tom Busby. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Nathan. Two people familiar with the breach tell us the Amazon CEO's phone was hacked after Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman sent him an encrypted message on WhatsApp. Investigators found digital evidence suggesting the message contained code that led to a breach of the billionaire's phone. A year ago, the National Enquirer disclosed an extramarital affair involving Bezos that included information from intimate text messages. A security consultant for Bezos later accused Saudi Arabia of accessing the billionaire's phone before the Enquirer expose the affair. I'm Tom Busby, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tom, thank you. The World Economic Forum continues in Davos, Switzerland today. Bloomberg's Jonathan Farrow is there and caught up with Larry Kudlow after the White House economic advisor attended a bilateral meeting with European leaders discussing trade.
Both sides agree it would be great to produce a good deal. There are a lot of issues at stake, and that's going to go on for a while.
Is the agreement with China something you could carry over to Europe? Is that an example of some of the work you could do with the Europeans?
Listen, market opening is the key. Europe has, for example, a lot of different standards for medical equipment, agriculture stuff, automobiles. They have different seatbelt standards, for God's sake.
Big barriers to entry for
U.S.
product.
So that's a form of regulatory protectionism.
Can you break that down?
Well, we will be talking about it.
And coming up shortly, President Trump is expected to hold a news conference before his departure from the World Economic Forum. We'll bring that to you live on Bloomberg Radio.
Also coming up from Davos, a special edition of Bloomberg Surveillance with Jonathan Farrow and Tom Keene. John's back with us now with a preview. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. On today's show, we speak with Morgan Stanley CEO James Gorman after a blowout quarter for earnings, plus a private equity conversation with David Rubenstein of the Carlyle Group, and we sit down with the chief investment officer of the world's biggest hedge fund, Bob Prince of Bridgewater Associates. That's all coming up at 7 a.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Surveillance, on Bloomberg Radio, and on Bloomberg Television. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. We'll be listening for all that coming up just under 1 hour from now from the World Economic Forum in Davos. And again, we are expecting remarks as well from President Trump. He says he will hold a news conference before his departure from Switzerland. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And at 6:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Michael Barr for a check of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. After a long first day for senators at the president's impeachment trial, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's resolutions passed along party lines after about 13 hours of failed amendment attempts from the Democrats. But McConnell did give some concessions during the discussion. McConnell is now giving each side 3 days of opening statements. White House counsel Pat Cipollone slammed Representative Jerry Nadler during the deliberation to subpoena former National Security Advisor John Bolton.
Mr. Nadler, you owe an apology to the President of the United States and his family. You owe an apology to the Senate. But most of all, you owe an apology to the American people.
Chief Justice John Roberts admonished House prosecutors after Nadler argued they owe it to the American people to call these witnesses forward.
President is on trial in the Senate, but the Senate is on trial in the eyes of the American people.
Justice Roberts says that both sides have to respect the Senate decorum and remember they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body.
One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. In the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging, and the presiding officer said the word ought not to have been used. I don't think we need to aspire to that highest standard, but I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
Look for the word pettifogging, the trend today on the Internet. Mm-hmm. The impeachment trial resumes at 1 p.m. Wall Street time. The sexual assault trial against Harvey Weinstein begins in earnest today with opening statements in New York. Six women are expected to testify against the disgraced movie mogul. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling for the legalization of recreational pot as the state looks to fill a projected $6 billion budget gap. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 6:09 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, it may end up being one of life's great mysteries, the identity of the one writer who for some reason did not see fit to vote for Derek Jeter for the Hall of Fame. He got the other 396 votes, but he does not go into the Hall unanimously as his teammate for 18 years, Mariano Rivera, did last year. The Yankee captain had so many great attributes, including never seeming to be nervous on the field, but yesterday was different.
This is something that I think when you start off your career, you're never thinking about the Hall of Fame. I mean, this is the highest honor that can be given to any individual that plays this game. And you know, I was speechless. When I got the call, you know, everyone said, you know, anticipate a phone call coming at such and such time. But quite frankly, I was pretty nervous. And when I got it, I really didn't know what to say.
Larry Walker in his final attempt got in by 6 votes. Curt Schilling getting closer, received 70%. New Giants coach Joe Judge may lack head coaching experience, but not his staff. Jason Garrett, the offense coordinator, and now also coming aboard, Freddie Kitchens and Brett Bielema. Kitchens, the head coach this past year in Cleveland. Bielema, a longtime college coach with Wisconsin and Arkansas. Rangers and Islanders headed for the All-Star break. The Isles won 4-2 at the Garden. St. John's struggles continue, an 82-68 loss at Marquette. In the waning seconds of Kansas's rout of Kansas State, a steal, a block shot, a taunt, and then all you-know-what broke out. Benches emptied, punches thrown. At one point, a guy picked up a chair. Lengthy suspensions are coming. Serena Williams won at the Australian Open. So did 15-year-old Coco Gauff. She will now face defending champ Naomi Osaka. With a Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashow. With Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. Picture this scenario for a moment. You want to go to the Super Bowl, but you don't have the cash for the ticket. Of course, they're going for more than $7,000 on the secondary market. But you know what? Now you can take out a loan. StubHub is partnering with financial technology company Affirm to let you buy tickets on a payment plan. Approved buyers will be able to select plans for Super Bowl tickets that span 3, 6, or 12 months, with an annual interest rate ranging from 10 to 30%. We're waiting remarks from President Trump as he prepares to depart the World Economic Forum in Davos. He is set to hold a news conference later this hour. We will bring it to you live here on Bloomberg Radio. Futures pointing to a higher open on Wall Street. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Life's an adventure. Experience it in the new Land Rover Discovery Sport. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, 617 on Wall Street. And Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Hannah George at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump tells Fox News the coronavirus from China is, quote, under control in the U.S. Meantime, Beijing is ramping up efforts to contain the outbreak as Hong Kong reports its first case. The Senate has set the rules for President Trump's impeachment trial. Republicans held behind Mitch McConnell, with all 53 senators voting to shelve 11 Democratic amendments to subpoena new documents and testimony. The Saudi crown prince may have hacked Jeff Bezos. People familiar with the matter say digital evidence suggests the Amazon CEO's phone was accessed after an exchange with Mohammed bin Salman on WhatsApp. And Netflix posted generally upbeat earnings. Shares are higher in early trading, even though the company expects to add fewer subscribers than projected. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen.
All right, Hannah, thank you. S&P futures up 12 points, Dow futures up 85, NASDAQ futures up 60, the DAX in Germany little changed. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.76%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.52%. NYMEX crude oil's down 0.5% or 31 cents at $58.07 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed at $15.57.70 an ounce. The euro, 1.1083 against the dollar. The yen at 109.94. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, opening statements and the first witness testimony are expected today in Harvey Weinstein's New York City rape trial. The once celebrated Pulp Fiction producer faces the possibility of life in prison if he is convicted. The Supreme Court will begin hearing arguments in a case over school choice programs and state aid for religious schools. justices are hearing a case involving three Montana parents on whether state aid can be used to fund education at religious schools. Derek Jeter and Colorado's Larry Walker were voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Jeter, the longtime captain of the New York Yankees and a five-time World Series champion, missed a unanimous vote by just one. In the NHL, the Islanders beat the Rangers 4-2. The Bruins won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's just before 6:20 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. We want to take a closer look at the earnings we got from Netflix yesterday. Shares of the streaming giant are up almost 1.2% in early trading after reporting fourth quarter results that met Wall Street expectations, an upbeat report, but came up short when it comes to future subscriber projections. Let's dive into these results now with Geetha Ranganathan, U.S. media analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Geetha, good morning. Netflix seems to say it is ready for the ramped up streaming war that is coming this year. Is it?
Yes. Good morning. Nathan. Q4 was actually very, very solid, like what you pointed out. Subscriber growth came in 15% ahead of guidance. So that definitely shows us that it was ready, more than ready for the competition, because we did have the anticipated, much anticipated Disney Plus launch, as well as the Apple TV launch. So it really looks like Netflix was able to hold its ground. But I think more importantly, the results yesterday really kind of underscore the importance of the international business. I think investors have to get used to the story that, you know, that there's really two parts of the business right now. The domestic market is mature. That's where we're seeing a lot of the competition. But really, the engine for the company is its international business, because 90% of the new business is coming from outside the U.S., and there's plenty of runway left for growth.
When you how much runway do you see there? That leads right to my next question.
Absolutely. So if you just look at broadband penetration right now in the U.S. So Netflix has over 60 million subscribers in the U.S. and Canada. That's about a 55 to 60% penetration in terms of broadband households. But then take that story outside, and it's less than 20%. And so that's where we kind of see a tremendous opportunity for the company as they kind of penetrate deeper and deeper into developing markets.
At the same time, the company has been touting a lot of these really popular shows that it is directing toward the domestic market. How important is it for Netflix to continue coming up with really big name content?
Oh, it's absolutely very, very critical. But one thing I think that Netflix has been doing really well is, of course, they have been investing a lot in local shows, in English language content. But the other big thing, the big thrust that they have been making over the past few months and that they will continue to do in 2020 is really focus on local titles, on non-English language content. So they're coming out with something like 130 new seasons of non-English language shows. And this has been really kind of critical and instrumental to them gaining new subscribers, because there is a huge gap that Netflix is looking to fill. Majority of the content right now produced by the big media companies is in English, but if you just look at it from a perspective, from a bigger picture perspective, it's like 400 million native English speakers versus a population of 7.5 billion in the world. So there's that huge disconnect, and Netflix is really kind of cashing in on that.
More than 100 shows outside the U.S. in non-English languages. I mean, is that going to add to the cash burn that's been a big part of Netflix's story for some time?
So I think the commentary yesterday on cash burn was actually very positive. They did have about $3.3 billion of free cash flow losses in 2019. But their guidance for 2020 is much, much better. They're going to actually pare that down to about $2.5 billion, which was roughly in line with consensus estimates. So what Reed Hastings and the management team said yesterday was that, yes, they are going to continue spending. They are going to continue to spend on those big shows like The Witcher and The Irishman and those kind of titles. But free cash flow, and so you are going to see some impact on free cash flow, but it is also going to moderate because they're looking at increased revenue and increased operating income.
Are you thinking that they're going to have to increase debt as well?
So they did say that they are going to go back to the debt markets a little bit. They already have about $15 billion in debt. So we are going to see, obviously, a little bit of an increase in debt, but I don't think it's going to be anything that's too onerous.
At some point, you got to wonder whether Netflix is going to have to alter its subscription fee model. What's it looking at there?
So I think the big question right now on investors' minds, there are probably a couple of them. So one is, have we hit a ceiling in terms of price? And I think in the short term, we have, because if you just kind of look at the Netflix plan, the fee per month, it's much, much higher than a Disney Plus or an Apple TV Plus and a lot of the other new plans that are coming out to market. Comcast, for example, is introducing a plan that's basically free to all of its subscribers. So in terms of price increases, I think we're going to hit a pause, at least domestically for right now. The next big question is, will Netflix really go ahead with an asked factor right now? You know, management did kind of acknowledge that they are seeing elevated churn in the U.S. Thanks to the launch of, you know, Disney. But I think overall, they are still very, very bullish on the long-term opportunity. At the end of the day, with all of these new streaming products coming to the market, what it's doing is it's really kind of pulling consumers away from traditional television viewing into the streaming market, and that is good news for Netflix.
Geetha Ranganathan, U.S. media analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence. Always good having you on with us. Thanks so much. Bloomberg Intelligence provides unique real-time research and context on industries and all the market and government fact that impact business. Terminal customers can access the function at BI Go. And again, looking at shares of Netflix in early trading following those fourth quarter results right now, Karen, they're up 1.2%.
All right, Nathan, thank you. And following futures higher this morning as well, we're seeing futures climb this morning as China takes steps to contain the spread of a deadly virus that had rattled international markets. Well, European stocks, they are raced in advance amid some mixed corporate earnings. S&P futures are up about 12 points right now. Dow futures up 78. NASDAQ futures up 57. The DAX in Germany is little changed. So is the CAC in Paris and the FTSE 100. Nikkei 225 in Japan was up 0.7%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong jumped 1.25%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.76%. And the yield on the 2-year, 1.52%. NYMEX crude oil's down 0.7% or 38 cents at $58 a barrel. COMEX gold is little changed at $15.57.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.1082 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3087. And the yen at 109.94. Nathan.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 6:31 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak along with Karen Moscow. I'm Nathan Hager, and we are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. So let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. As Karen mentioned, China is taking steps to contain the spread of a deadly virus that's rattled markets. The country says it will start nationwide screening to tackle the outbreak. Here with more is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
This couldn't come at a more critical time, with millions hitting the road for the Chinese New Year. Officials to step up strict monitoring of travelers, and Wuhan, from which this emanated, has been put under heavy supervision. Confirmed cases now in 5 additional countries, including the U.S., and China has invited WHO experts to learn more about the virus. The government is scrambling quickly now to prevent the outbreak from becoming a political crisis. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. HSBC, Tencent, and other major companies in China are limiting travel and foregoing traditions around the Lunar New Year holiday to protect employees against the virus.
On the earnings front, shares of Netflix are now up 1.3% in early trading. The company delivered generally upbeat results, with overseas growth helping to offset a slowdown in the U.S. At the same time, projections for user growth fell short. Andre Swanston is CEO of True Optic Data.
The real competition for Netflix really starts in 2020. I do think that it's going to be difficult to tell what the full impact of all these other new solutions will truly be on Netflix in the first quarter.
And Netflix is facing increased streaming competition from platforms launched by Apple, Comcast, AT&T, and Disney.
In Europe, shares of Burberry are down 2.5%. The luxury retailer became the latest victim of the Hong Kong protests as sales in that market dropped by half over the Christmas quarter.
And Daimler says 2019 profit came in below estimates. Legal costs related to diesel emissions allegations ate into margins at its Mercedes-Benz luxury car group. Daimler shares are lower by 1.5%.
All right, it's 6:33 on Wall Street. Now let's get the latest world and national news, although President Trump is now stepping to the podium at the World Economic Forum in Davos. Let's listen in.
Robert, Steve, come on up. Good afternoon. We've had a tremendous 2 days here. We'll be heading back right after this conference, and just concluded some additional meetings. We've had a lot of them. And Davos has treated us really beautifully. It's been a tremendous success. Everyone's talking about America's unprecedented economic success. It's really the talk of the town, so to speak. Since my election, America has gained over 7 million new jobs. The unemployment rate is now the lowest in over half a century. The average unemployment rate for my administration is the lowest of any U.S. president in recorded history, which is very nice. We have some good ones. We have some bad ones, too, by the way. Unemployment rates among African-American, Hispanic-American, Asian-Americans has reached a record low in the history of our country, the lowest. African-American youth unemployment has reached the lowest in the history of our country. So proud of that. African-American poverty numbers have plummeted to their lowest rate ever recorded. Doing really well. Unemployment rate for women has reached the lowest level in almost 70 years. And the veterans' unemployment rate dropped to a record low. Unemployment rate for disabled Americans has reached its all-time record low also. These are incredible numbers, Rob. Workers without a high school diploma have received and achieved the lowest unemployment rate ever in recorded history. And that's so important. Without a high school diploma, we have a lot of great people that don't have a high school diploma, so we have record low unemployment. A record number of young Americans are now employed. We have the highest number of people working in our country that we've ever had before. We've never had anything even close. We're almost up to 160 million. And we've lifted 10 million people off of welfare. And you know all about food stamps. We talk about it all the time. But millions and millions of people don't need food stamps anymore. It's not that we've lifted them off, which we have, but they don't need them anymore. They have jobs. They're doing really well. The U.S. stock markets have soared, and they've reached the highest point that they've ever had. We've made at least $19 trillion in terms of wealth, in terms of wealth creation for our country beyond the stock markets. And we are now by far the biggest economy in the world. China would have caught us. They were getting very close. It was anticipated that in 2019, this is for many years, I'm not telling you any secrets, that by 2019, China would become the largest economy in the world. And right now we're much larger. But we have a great new deal with China, great deal. We have, I would say, our best relationship that we've ever had with China on top of everything else. And we're starting phase two. Phase one turned out to be much bigger than we anticipated because we have intellectual property protections. We have many of the financial deals and aspects of the financial deals that we wanted, we got done, and other things. In addition to the farmers, we've got the total complete package for the farmers. And we think that'll we estimate that'll be anywhere between $40 and $50 billion. The number, I think, is going to be closer to $50 billion. The most they've ever done is 16. So we go from 16 to anywhere from $40 to $50 billion that they'll be purchasing. We're an economic powerhouse like actually we've never been. Jobs, factories, companies are pouring back into the United States. That's one of the reasons I've been in Davos is we have had conversations with other leaders of other countries where we've traditionally had tremendous deficits. I say you have to move factories and plants back here. They took a lot of them. They actually took a lot of them, and now they're going to move them back. They're not going to move them back. The companies are coming back because everybody wants to be here. But the countries also understand that we have to balance out our trade, and we're doing incredibly well in that way. And one of the people that was very important for me to meet from the World Trade Organization is Roberto Azevedo, and he is a highly respected man. He happens to be this gentleman right here. I thought I'd have him say a few words, but the World Trade Organization, as you know, I've had dispute running with them for quite a while because our country hasn't been treated fairly. China's viewed as a developing nation. India's viewed as a developing nation. We're not viewed as a developing nation. As far as I'm concerned, we're a developing nation, too. But they got tremendous advantages by the fact that they were considered developing and we weren't. And they shouldn't be. But if they are, we are. And we're talking about a whole new structure for the deal. Or we'll have to do something. But the World Trade Organization's been very unfair to the United States for many, many years. And without it, China wouldn't be China. China wouldn't be where they are right now. I mean, China, that was the vehicle that they used. And I give them great credit. And I also don't give the people that were in my position great credit because, frankly, they let that all happen. But the vehicle was the World Trade Organization. And Roberto and I have a tremendous relationship, and we're going to do something that I think will be very dramatic. He'll be coming with a lot of his representatives to Washington sometime, maybe next week or the week after, and we'll start working on it. So I'd like to introduce just for briefly Roberto and say a few words on behalf of the WTO, and then I'm going to introduce Larry Kudlow to say exactly where we are in terms of our economy. Some of you know, but we've had some tremendous numbers just over the very recent past. So please, Roberto.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And I think it's fair to say that we have been saying for quite some time that if the multilateral system, if the WTO is to deliver it and perform its role in today's global economy, it has to be updated. It has to be changed. It has to be reformed. This is an agenda that is squarely before members. I don't think anybody in Geneva misses the point. I think they understand that the system has not been functioning properly in many areas. That's something that we're trying to address. I'm very happy that in the conversation today with President Trump, he agreed that this is something that needs to happen. The WTO has to change. We are committed to effect those changes. And this is something that...
States, a lot of these leaders, these are the biggest business leaders in the world. And this morning was very inspirational. I mean, these companies are really going to expand. And it was a request of mine. But what we did, we've been very good to them. They're all doing very well. And we have companies from Europe, companies from Asia now coming to the United States. That's where the action is, as one of them said. That's where the action is. So it's really been great. And now we'll be leaving and going back to Washington. Okay? Yes.
Mr. President, do you want to hear from witnesses in the impeachment trial? Your team has been a little inconsistent on this.
Well, I'll tell you the way I look at it. It's a total hoax. It's a disgrace. They talked about their tremendous case, and it's all done, their tremendous case. They had no case. It's all a hoax. It's a con job, like Schiff. He's a corrupt politician. Now, I'll leave that to the Senate. The Senate's going to have to answer that. I have great respect for the Senate as a body and many of the individuals. I have great respect. So I'll leave that to the Senate. But this is the greatest witch hunt. This started from the day I came down with the future First Lady. The day we came down the escalator, this started. And I watched the... they've been driven crazy. You know what's driven them crazy? All of these record numbers on unemployment. African-American, Asian-American. You take a look. Hispanic-American is numbers that nobody's even believing. They're looking at all of this. They're looking at this tremendous success, the likes of which they've never seen before. In this country, they've never seen anything like this, and it's driven the Democrats crazy. As Congressman Green said, Al Green, he's a beauty. As Congressman Green said, we got to beat him by impeachment because we can't beat him in the election. And I hope that's true, because honestly, they can't beat me in the election. I don't think they can. I know what they're. I know what I'll be running against one way or the other. It's one of them. And I think we're going to do very well. But I think we're going to do well because nobody's done in the first 3 years, less than 3 years, because a lot of these numbers were taken from 2 months ago. They ended 2 months ago. In less than 3 years, nobody's done the kind of numbers we've done. So I'm going to head back and I'll be watching it. But it's really going to be up to the Senate. We're going to have them make that determination. Please.
President,
Yes, Mr. President. You were the keynote speaker here, but you shared some of the spotlight with a Scandinavian teenager, Greta Thunberg.
Oh, that's very nice.
Who you had said needs to work on her anger. She had some very harsh words.
I didn't say anger, I said anger management.
Anger management, yes. Yeah. She had some very strong words here that the United States and other industrialized countries need to do more. Do you still feel that you're doing enough? You
how old is she?
She's 17 now.
Oh, yes. That's good.
But what is your response to
her? She beat me out on Time Magazine.
But did you hear from other world leaders and business leaders who said that they think that she has a message that
No, I didn't, actually. But I would have loved to have seen her speak. I did not. No, not at all. I think aspects of it are, I think that some people are, they put it at a level that is, you know, unrealistic to a point you can't live your lives. We want to have the cleanest water on earth. We want to have the cleanest air on earth. Our numbers, as you saw, we had record numbers come out very recently. Our numbers are very, very good. Our environmental numbers, our water numbers, our numbers on air are tremendous. We have to do something about other continents. We have to do something about other countries. When we're clean and beautiful and everything's good, but you have another continent where the fumes are rising at levels that you can't believe. I mean, I think Greta ought to focus on those places. But we are doing better right now than we've ever done in terms of cleanliness, in terms of numbers. We have a beautiful ocean called the Pacific Ocean, where thousands and thousands of tons of garbage flows toward us. And that's put there by other countries. So I think Greta has to start working on those other countries.
Mr. President.
By the way, congratulations on your show.
Thank you very much.
They made a very wise decision.
Thank you very much. We invite you for an interview whenever you're available. Can I ask you, just to be clear, and for future presidents, is abuse of power an impeachable offense?
Well, you're going to talk to the lawyers about it. But I will tell you, there's nothing here. I had a very innocent conversation with a very fine gentleman from the Ukraine, and it was based on that. People don't even want to talk about the conversation. I got to watch glimpses in between all of these meetings that I just told you about. I got to watch glimpses of what is taking place, wasting time in Washington. And I watched. They don't talk about my conversation. They don't talk about my transcripts. Remember this. When Schiff made up the phony story and he repeated it to Congress and the world, and it was a totally phony story. Then I released the transcript. There was supposed to be a second whistleblower. What happened to him? There was, wait. Otherwise, I won't do your show. Wait. There was supposed to be an informer. What happened to the informer? All of these people disappeared. And when they saw this transcript, they said, we got problems. But they went ahead because they were already there, because they had a phony, concocted story made up. So here's the story. Did nothing wrong. It was a perfect conversation. It was totally appropriate. The best lawyers in the world have looked at it. The Department of Justice has looked at it, given it a sign-off. There was nothing wrong. They never thought I was going to release the conversation. They probably didn't think we had transcribers or we had it transcribed or taped, but they never thought we were going to release it. When we released that conversation, all hell broke out with the Democrats, because they say, wait a minute, this is much different than Shifty Schiff told us. So we're doing very well. I got to watch enough. I thought our team did a very good job. But honestly, we have all the material. They don't have the material.
I ask you because your attorneys say it's not. Alan Dershowitz says the framers of the Constitution did not permit impeachment on grounds like abuse of power or obstruction. They objected open-ended, vague criteria. So for future presidents, is abuse of power an impeachable offense?
Well, it depends. But if you take a look at this, and from what everybody tells me, all I do is I'm honest. I make great deals. I've made great deals for our country. Now we're working with the WTO. You're probably surprised by that, but there's been a long-term abusive situation to the U.S. I make great deals for our country, and they're honest deals. And when you read that transcription, and by the way, it wasn't one call, it was two calls. Nobody likes to talk about that. There was one call, which was perfect, and then there was a second call, I guess a couple of months later, which was perfect. The president of Ukraine said it was perfect. The foreign minister of Ukraine said it was perfect. So if we have a transcription, we have the call, and we have the person on the other side of the call saying it was good. Now, here's the other thing. They got their money long before schedule. They got all their money. What nobody says is very important to me. Why isn't Germany paying? Why isn't UK paying? Why isn't France paying? Why aren't the European nations paying? Why is it always the sucker, United States? That's one. And the other thing I wanted to check very carefully and is very important is corruption. And we do that, too. This was a perfect call, and I think we're doing very well.
You're listening to a news conference with the President of the United States, Donald Trump, at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
I'd like to see if we can do something. But again, we're doing a trade deal, and it's a very big deal. Phase one is done. Phase two is being discussed. We are discussing aspects of your question, yes.
Mr. President, thank you. Just to clarify on Paula's question, we know that the Senate will set the rules for witnesses, but what did you want? At one point, you demanded a witness.
I can live either way.
But what do you want?
I'll tell you what I think. It's such a hoax. I think it's so bad for our country. When we have the head of the World Trade Organization here, and he has to listen to this nonsense about a call that was perfect that nobody talks about. I never see them talking about the transcription. I never see them talking about the call because there's nothing to say. You read it. Somebody should just sit there and read it, and everybody's going to say, you mean that's an impeachable event? If that were impeachable, Lyndon Johnson would have had to leave office in his first day. Kennedy would have had to leave office his first day. It's a hoax. And you understand it's a hoax better than anybody. It's a hoax. And that's the way it is. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. President, a question on Iran. Initially, you said repeatedly to Americans that after Iran retaliated for the Soleimani strike, no Americans were injured. We now know at least 11 U.S. service men were airlifted from Iraq. Can you explain the discrepancy?
No, I heard that they had headaches and a couple of other things, but I would say, and I can report, it is not very serious.
So you don't consider potential traumatic brain injury serious?
They told me about it numerous days later. You'd have to ask the Department of Defense. No, I don't consider them very serious injuries relative to other injuries that I've seen. I've seen what Iran has done with their roadside bombs to our troops. I've seen people with no legs and with no arms. I've seen people that were horribly, horribly injured in that area, that war. In fact, many cases put those bombs put there by Soleimani, who's no longer with us. I consider them to be really bad injuries. No, I do not consider that to be bad injuries, no.
Do you have any timeline for that? And if you don't hit that timeline, if there is one, are you automatically going to go to
autotariffs,
or is there another avenue other than autotariffs?
Yeah, great question, actually. I don't have a timeline, but maybe I do in my own mind. They have to move relatively quickly, but they have to treat us fairly. The European Union was formed pretty much for this reason, I suspect. You know, if you really think about it, why was it formed? They formed their airplane company, which does